Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. New York State officials say the 29-year-old driver in yesterday's vehicle terror attack in Lower Manhattan had been planning his actions for weeks. Authorities are also saying that the driver left notes pledging his allegiance to ISIS. 8 people were killed in that attack, at least 12 injured. One of the injured is Newton resident Martine Morrow, a scientist at Novartis. Tom Mountain, chairman of the Newton Republican City Committee and a friend of Morrow's, said after he heard about the attack, he assumed the worst.
We were bracing for the worst and expected the worst. But on the other hand, his colleagues were killed, and that's extremely sad.
Now, Morrow is originally from Argentina, and as you just heard, 5 of his friends, also from Argentina, were killed in the attack. Another victim was Belgian. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio spoke to that point today.
We will remember them as New Yorkers. They were here because this city is a beacon to people all over the world, a place that every kind of person comes to and is respected. And that won't change.
The suspect, Saifulo Saipov, is from Uzbekistan. He is a legal permanent resident and came to the United States in 2010 through a diversity visa program. Today, President Donald Trump called on Congress to end the so-called green card lottery.
We have to get tough. We have to get smart. We have to do what's right to protect our citizens. We will never waver in the defense of our beloved country, ever. And we'll never, ever forget the beautiful lives that have been taken from us.
Well, let's take a moment to focus a little bit on the fact that this was yet another vehicular terrorist attack. The Counter-Extremism Project has documented that at least 34 such attacks worldwide have taken place since 2006. So what measures have been or could be put in place to stop these kinds of attacks? Joining us with his thoughts is Daniel Linsky. He's former superintendent-in-chief of the Boston Police Department, a 27-year veteran of the force. He's also current managing director at Kroll's Investigations and Disputes Practice. They're a risk consulting firm. Daniel Linsky, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me. I'm sorry we always talk about issues that have gravely impacted other people's lives and the safety of our communities, but it's important to see what we can get on the table to see if we can address these issues and move forward.
Likewise, I feel the same way. Well, first of all, I just want to ask you a quick question about what we learned about the suspect today. John Miller, the Deputy New York Police Commissioner for Intelligence and Counterterrorism, has said that the suspect claims that he did this in the name of ISIS, but that he may not have been connected to any FBI investigations. So what's your response to that?
It's oftentimes, you know, we're seeing individuals who are acting on inspired attacks because they agree with the beliefs of these terrorist groups, but they're not directed and not in direct contact with the leadership and organizations of these terrorist activists.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a bit more about the fact that he used a vehicle, the suspect allegedly used a vehicle to kill and harm so many people. I mean, what can be done by law enforcement, for example, to prevent these attacks or at least make city streets safer?
Well, when there are special events and we anticipate large crowds and dense crowds in areas, we can conduct mitigation strategies where we, you know, block off and change traffic routes, put some bollards in place. We can put barriers up and prevent vehicles from getting up ahead of steam and having the ability to come into contact with large numbers of people. But that's only when we have special events where we identify a risk that we have to address. There is no way that law enforcement across this country can be in every street, every location, every day. There are some things that law enforcement has been doing for a number of years since after Oklahoma City, and especially after 2001, when the World Trade Center was attacked. We call them tripwire programs, where they're out looking at people who are doing pre-operational preparing. So someone who's going out and buying a large amount of animal nitrate, that doesn't have a farm, that has a rental truck, and has shown up for the first time looking for, 2 tons of fertilizer. That's going to trigger a response. And law enforcement has been lucky and also wisely teaming up with business people who are the eyes and ears on the front lines. That is, someone's purchasing chemicals, precursor chemicals, or components that can be utilized for these destructive devices and actions, we identify them up front. 30 different plots have been thwarted that were aimed at New York since 9/11, that were stopped dead in their tracks. So they're still doing that. They're at storage centers and, places where people could be putting and assembling these things and working to see if there's anyone suspicious out there. That being said,
Mr. Linsky, sorry, I just want to jump in here for a second because I accidentally talked over you when you said it was 30 different plots so far in New York have been interrupted and foiled because of this tripwire system. My apologies for speaking over you, but I think you were probably getting to a point which I just wanted to ask you about, which is, the examples that you used were people sort of doing things and behaviors that were probably outside the sort of the norm of everyday life, but renting a car or a truck is like the most normal thing in the world. And in this case, according to law enforcement officials, the timeline was that the suspect rented a truck from Home Depot in New Jersey at 2 o'clock, and less than an hour later, he was trying to mow down people in Lower Manhattan. So that seems to be a place where it would be really hard to intervene without, denying people their basic rights to, go out and rent a car.
Absolutely. We can't have a 5-day waiting period for a car, right? People can, instead of renting a car, you can buy a car and never, if you're intending to die and it's your hottest attack, you're never going to make a payment on it. Or you can steal a car. We can't be all places everywhere. And that was one of the points I was going to make. However, that doesn't mean we give up. We still need to be out there working the front lines, engaging other people to be the eyes and ears of law enforcement if they're seeing something, saying something. We saw in San Bernardino neighbors who said, we thought something was suspicious. There was odd people, odd activity, odd noises coming from the garage. We really thought there was a problem going on over there, but we didn't want to say anything. And as a result, there was no chance for San Bernardino police to impact that attack beforehand. Who knows what might have happened if neighbors had called and they started to take a look at what was going on out there. So we can't stop everything everywhere, but we still have to be out there putting our best game up, trying to cut these things off wherever we can. And the way we win is what New York did last night, is to have that parade, to come out and stand up and to honor those victims by going about our daily life.
Yeah,
that's how we defeat these guys.
I'm seeing a note here that says in May 2017, the Transportation and Security Agency, the TSA, actually issued a warning to truck and bus companies, urging them to watch out for potential vehicular terrorist assailants. So another sort of wrinkle in the see something, say something thinking that you were talking about in just a second ago. But Mr. Linsky, quick question here, because there's also sort of the physical infrastructure question, right? I mean, in New York, parts of Times Square and the Financial District have those anti-vehicle ramps. They're not unfamiliar in certain places around Boston, particularly in front of important government buildings, big barricades between pedestrians and vehicles. Would you advocate more of that kind of thing?
So I think we need those during special events, obviously, to deploy things. And if you have a location, say a government building, that has a higher risk to it, then you need to build it with an environmental design that is, got distance and standoff and prevents a vehicle from getting up against it. But we can't build everywhere, every place to not have vehicles. We need vehicles to pull up to buildings and drop off all kinds of material. So we can't do it everywhere all the time. We've got to look at what the risk is, assess it, and put the appropriate mitigation measures in place when they are appropriate. But there's no way in the world we can cover every inch of roadways and sidewalks that some jihadists would like to utilize to attack innocent people.
Yeah. Well, Daniel Linsky is former superintendent in chief of the Boston Police Department. He's now managing director in the investigations and dispute practice at Kroll, a risk consulting firm. Daniel Linsky, it's always great to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.